Welcome to this morning's Investor and Analyst Teleconference. My name is Howard Marks, and I'm Director of Investor Relations. With me, I have Acting CEO Mike Wilkins and CFO Gordon Lefebvre. Mike and Gordon will provide a short commentary on today's announcement covering AMP's divestment of the Australian and New Zealand wealth protection and mature businesses, and will reference the presentation lodged with the ASX this morning. We will then move to Q&A. So if everyone's ready, over to you, Mike.
Well, thanks, Howard. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. You'll have seen this morning that we've announced the completion of our portfolio review, which involves the sale of our wealth protection and mature businesses, the reinsurance of our New Zealand retail portfolio, and our plan to explore an IPO of our New Zealand wealth management and advice businesses. These actions represent a major step forward in reshaping AMP as a simpler, more agile business, well positioned to compete in our core markets. We've also posted our usual third quarter cash flow update this morning. It's been a challenging quarter for the business, particularly in wealth management, but this was not unexpected given the reputational impact of the Royal Commission that we flagged at the half year. We've also had continuing market issues in our wealth protection business with a negative experience outcome of around $22 million for the quarter. As Howard mentioned, today's call will focus on the portfolio review. Gordon and I will walk you through the detail and then we'll move to Q&A. We've prepared a brief presentation which was published on the ASX site this morning and is up on our website as well, and we'll be using this as a guide to our comments. So starting with a high-level overview on slide 2. We formally announced the review of our wealth protection, mature and New Zealand businesses at the start of this year. Throughout this process, our objective has been to realise value from these businesses and to free up capital for investment in our growth portfolio. We've been deliberately thorough in assessing the options, and our conclusion has been that we are not the natural owners of the wealth protection, mature and New Zealand businesses, given their capital intensity and their growth profile. In that context, we're pleased that the review and the actions that we're taking will deliver strong outcomes financially and strategically, as well as for our customers and our people. We're effectively announcing three related transactions today. Firstly, the sale of our wealth protection and mature businesses in Australia and New Zealand to Resolution Life for $3.3 billion. We expect this transaction to complete in the second half of 2019. Resolution will take the benefits and risks for these businesses with effect from the 1st of July of this year, subject to certain risk-sharing agreements, which Gordon will pick up on later. As we go through the process of separating, we'll transition our wealth protection and mature businesses to being specialist in-force managers. This will be a phased closure to new business. Secondly, a binding agreement to reinsure our New Zealand retail wealth protection portfolio, realising up to $150 million of capital, subject to regulatory approval. We expect to finalise this arrangement prior to the completion of the Resolution transaction. And thirdly, we also intend to seek divestment of our residual New Zealand wealth management and advice businesses via an IPO in 2019. Combined, this is a strong financial outcome with proceeds from the transaction of $3.45 billion, which of course doesn't include any further potential proceeds if we move forward with an IPO of New Zealand. From a customer perspective, we're pleased that the transactions will deliver a good outcome with minimal change to customers' existing arrangements. In Resolution Life, we're partnering with a high-quality group who have demonstrated a track record of excellent customer service over many years. And from a strategic perspective, we will have substantially simplified our portfolio and reduced the complexity of our business. We're also strengthening our balance sheet, providing maximum strategic flexibility and optionality for our incoming CEO, Francesco De Ferrari, who will drive the renewed direction for AMP. Francesco and the board will evaluate all options for the use of proceeds of the transaction, from further investment to returns to shareholders, and will provide an update following the completion of these transactions. Let me now provide you with some more colour on each of these components, starting with the key elements of the Resolution Life transaction, which is on slide 3. We've achieved a total valuation for the business which equates to 0.82 times the pro forma embedded value ex franking credits, which in the current market circumstances we think is a good outcome. The total consideration for the resolution transaction is $3.3 billion, and that's made up of a mix of 65% cash and cash equivalents, $1.9 billion of cash and $300 million in Tier 1 preference shares, and 35% or $1.1 billion of value in income-generating investments through ongoing interests in the mature business as well as in Resolution Life. And Gordon will provide some more detail on the non-cash elements of the transaction in a few moments. However, I would make the point that on each of these non-cash elements, we expect to have the opportunity to monetize our investment over time, but in the short term, they'll deliver strong cash flows to us. In addition to our ongoing economic interests in its business, we'll also be an operating partner to Resolution Life. A new relationship agreement with Resolution Life has been established, and AMP Capital will continue to manage the wealth protection and mature assets of the businesses being sold. AMP Capital will also join Resolution Life's global panel of preferred asset managers. So in summary, we believe we've achieved strong financial outcomes from the transaction. Now turning to customer outcomes, which is on the next slide, slide 4. Prioritising our customers' interests has been a key focus throughout the portfolio review. As noted, the transaction will result in minimal change and disruption for customers. All terms and conditions of existing policies will be maintained, and we've begun our communications to customers on this today. In short, customers don't need to do anything. Their policies won't change, and neither will the service levels that they enjoy. Likewise, there'll be no change to our approach to claims handling. In fact, the majority of our team supporting customers in the wealth protection and mature businesses are expected to transfer with the business. This is going to provide continuity and effective knowledge transfer, as well as, pleasingly, certainty for our people. Throughout our discussions, we've seen that Resolution Life shares our commitment to providing high-quality service to customers. It's got an excellent track record for customer service and working closely with advisors and brokers in different markets. It's made its name on the management of in-force customer portfolios, investing strongly behind that strategy to improve service, retention and claims management of the businesses that it's acquired. Whilst this will be its first business in Australia, Resolution Life has got deep experience of life insurance internationally and under the leadership of Sir Clive Cowdery has built a strong reputation. Over the past 15 years, the Resolution Life team have operated 27 life insurance companies through three different entities, each of which have delivered strong returns to investors. This business is the team's fourth entity. It's a private company backed by a small group of large pension and sovereign wealth funds, and from the second half of next year, also backed by AMP. Moving on now to New Zealand and the reinsurance agreement. We've entered into a binding agreement with Swiss Re to reinsure our New Zealand retail book, which we expect to realise about $150 million of capital to AMP, subject to regulatory approval. The agreement's expected to be in place from the 31st of December of this year for claims incurred from that date and will cover approximately 65% of the New Zealand retail wealth protection portfolio. The reinsurance will reduce New Zealand profit margins by approximately $20 million on a full year basis from 2019. That impact is known and has been factored into the Resolution Life transaction. Now moving on to the potential New Zealand IPO, which is on slide 6. With the wealth protection and mature businesses divestment, our view is that our residual New Zealand business, which comprises wealth management platforms and advice and distribution partnerships, potentially has an appropriate profile for an IPO. We've announced that we intend to seek divestment via an IPO next year, subject to market conditions. But to be clear, we haven't yet started the process and no definitive timeline has been set. The 2018 pro forma standalone earnings for the business, with New Zealand wealth protection and mature removed, is around $40 million Australian dollars. An IPO, when complete, would unlock further value and deliver capital back to AMP, and we'll provide more information on the process as our plans become clearer. So with those opening comments, let me now hand to Gordon to cover the transaction proceeds and the pro formas for AMP post-completion. So Gordon.
Thank you, Mike, and good morning to you all. So I'll pick up the presentation at slide 7 and present details on the transaction proceeds, key transaction considerations, as well as the pro forma financial impacts. The waterfall chart on page 7 outlines a series of adjustments to arrive at the net proceeds number that we expect once the transaction settles. Details of these adjustments are as follows. $500 million is required to repay debt that AMP Life has outstanding to AMP Limited, as the entity is being sold debt-free to Resolution. AMP Life can only partially repay these debts from existing funding sources. $300 million, which we've estimated to be the impact of rebalancing the debt and equity levels in AMP Limited once the transaction is complete, given that it will have a smaller balance sheet. $160 million of capital synergies. These are due in part to the loss of favourable regulatory treatment for the investments that we intend to transfer from AMP Life to AMP Limited, as well as diminished diversification benefits as we move the wealth management and superannuation businesses away from AMP Life as part of the transaction. Note that the investment referred to above is principally our 19.9% interest in the China Life Pension Company, which is held through AMP Life, but will be retained in the AMP Group, subject to the approval of Chinese regulators transferring from AMP Life to AMP Limited prior to settlement. And finally, there are $320 million of after-tax separation and transaction costs, covering the following main items. Separation of key information technology and customer administration systems, both in Australia and New Zealand. Successor fund transfer of the Australian wealth management and superannuation business out of AMP Life, including the migration of customer records and data, trustee arrangements and fund balances, and finally, restructuring costs. As highlighted by Mike, after separation, the residual wealth management business of AMP will be significantly simplified, enabling it to sustain and enhance its competitive position. And so with these steps, and by the time the transaction settles, we will have access to $2.2 billion of net proceeds, comprising $1.1 billion of cash and cash equivalents and $1.1 billion of income-generating equity investments. We will evaluate and determine the use of these net proceeds following completion of the transaction. Included in the $1.1 billion as a cash equivalent is $300 million of preference shares that will be issued by AMP Life to AMP Limited as part consideration at completion of the transaction. These are APRA-approved alternative Tier 1 investments yielding approximately 6% fully franked. Based on our experience with issuances of similar securities, we expect the secondary market in these notes to be deep and liquid. AMP Limited has a right to monetize all or part of the preference shares at any time immediately following issuance. And closer to settlement, we will determine whether to hold or sell these into the secondary market. The income-generating equity investments we hold post-completion are as follows. Firstly, an ongoing economic interest in the earnings of the mature business. Now, we know the mature business well, and we're confident that it will deliver a steady stream of approximately $50 million per annum after tax, and also allow us to receive franking credits. We have valued this interest at $600 million by discounting the expected future cash flows at 10% and assuming a runoff of 5% per annum. And secondly, we have an interest in the Resolution Life Group Holdings entity. This is the entity which will ultimately own the businesses that we are selling. Over time, this will be a globally diverse business with a portfolio of in-force blocks of insurance business. We expect this entity to generate a significant yield on its portfolio and have valued our founding partner stake at $515 million. This is on an equivalent basis to the other founding partners. We reasonably expect opportunities to monetize these two investments over time. However, in the period we hold them, they will deliver strong cash flow returns to the group. So overall, when you consider these elements, the transaction will strengthen AMP Limited's balance sheet and provide strategic flexibility for future growth and or capital management activities. Turning then to slide 8, we call out a number of key transaction considerations. Central to the transaction, as Mike has already called out, is an agreement with the resolution that, as from the 1st of July of 2018, they will assume an economic interest in the profits or losses from the wealth protection and mature businesses in Australia and New Zealand. As a consequence, they're on risk for any future changes in best estimate assumptions. This arrangement is subject to certain risk-sharing arrangements which allow for an equal sharing of negative claims experience in Australia above $20 million between now and settlement, offset by gains of up to $45 million, depending on the lapse performance of the New Zealand individual risk business. The transaction requires the approval of the Australian Federal Treasurer, Foreign Investment Review Board, New Zealand Overseas Investment Office, and regulators across Australia, New Zealand, and Bermuda. Successor fund transfer is expected to take between 9 and 12 months to complete, as this is the key separation activity driving the overall timing of transaction settlement. We expect that to take place in the second half of 2019. Finally, to slide 9 and details of earnings and other financial impacts. These are estimated on a pro forma annualised full year 2018 basis after tax. We expect the following: $80 to $90 million per annum reduction in the operating earnings of the Australian wealth management business. This relates to an unwinding of internal distribution arrangements, as well as earnings from products previously reported in wealth management that are being sold together with AMP Life. $40 million per annum go forward annual earnings contribution from the New Zealand wealth management and advice business after the sale of the wealth protection and mature portfolios in New Zealand to resolution. Approximately $40 million per annum of residual annualised stranded group office costs on separation. $110 million per annum in underlying investment income from the preference shares and equity investments we will hold as part of the transaction consideration. And finally, interest expense on our corporate debt that is expected to be in the order of $35 million per annum, given our plans to reduce debt levels post the transaction. For business unit reporting purposes, from financial year 2018 and beyond, the business units being sold will be recorded as discontinued operations. We will report separately underlying earnings from retained businesses and discontinued operations. The board will exclude the underlying earnings from discontinued businesses in determining the full year financial 2018 final dividend payout. Consistent with our previous guidance, the total full year 2018 dividend payout will be targeted to be within but towards the lower end of the 70 to 90% payout range based on underlying profits. So with that, I'll hand back to Mike, who will complete today's presentation before we then take your questions.
Thanks, Gordon. So to reiterate, we're pleased to have completed the portfolio review and to have delivered strong financial, customer and strategic outcomes. We've also provided continuing employment opportunities for the vast majority of our people. When complete, we will have exited each of our managed for value businesses, releasing capital and simplifying the portfolio, which provides us with flexibility for the future. With this agenda, 2019 will obviously be a transition year for AMP, with a core focus on separation and transition. However, we'll also be focused on capitalising on the market opportunities before us and on other opportunities which the transactions present. Francesco is going to start as CEO in about 5 weeks' time. He's been briefed on the transactions and is in strong agreement with the plan. Upon arrival, his focus is going to be on setting the future strategic direction for the organisation, looking to grow and develop our continuing core businesses, whilst also moving through the large separation and transition program of Wealth Protection and Mature and the New Zealand Wealth Management IPO. We think the opportunity for simplification is large, as is the opportunity for further cost efficiencies. And as Gordon has highlighted, with approximately $1.1 billion in cash and $1.1 billion in income-generating investments, with the potential to monetise these investments in the future, we'll have a strengthened balance sheet and a simpler, more agile business focused on growth with an enhanced ability to compete in our chosen markets. So with those comments, Howard, I think we can now move to questions.
Thanks, Mike. Before handing over to questions, I'd like to ask if you could please limit your questions to this morning's announcement. If you'd like to ask a question, please state your name and company clearly for the operator. If everyone's ready, I think we should start with Simon first.
Good morning. Can I just get you to confirm exactly what these transactions do to the $1.8 billion worth of surplus capital that was last reported, excluding the New Zealand sale that's potential at this stage?
Yes, Simon, good morning. It's Gordon Lefebvre. The $1.8 billion of surplus capital remains in place as it was at the 30th of June. It'll be the case that that any surplus capital is there until such time as we settle up these transactions and divest the businesses we've outlined today. What we've sought to do is to outline for you the impact that the transaction has by way of the various transaction proceeds. And by the time we get to completion, sometime in the order of 12 months from now, we'll know exactly what the capital available is to the organisation and what it is that we should do with it at that time.
Mm-hmm. And also, could I ask then, in terms of, you know, obviously retaining an economic interest in the entity that's taking the businesses, was a full and complete sale considered, and perhaps you can sort of enlighten us on why that wasn't the path that you went down?
Well, Simon, with respect, it is a full and complete sale,
mm-hmm.
What we've done in taking an ongoing interest in the business that's ultimately acquiring this is putting some of our faith behind Clive and his team as he manages it going forward. And so by holding that residual interest in the business for a period of time, we're able, if you will, to assess just how it travels going forward. And ultimately, as we've said, we do have the opportunity to monetise that investment.
Okay, Simon, thank you. No more questions from me.
Simon, it's Mike.
Yeah.
Just adding to that, I think that by retaining that, we actually maximise the optionality that we've got as an organisation, because whilst this is one transaction for Resolution Life, they are intending to undertake a number of these transactions internationally, and we will be able to participate in that. So we like that optionality, but as both Gordon and I have said, there is the opportunity to monetise these further down the track. But at the moment, we're very happy to hold an interest in Resolution.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Daniel Tui from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, guys. Congratulations on getting this across the line. Just two questions. Firstly, there's a fair bit to work through on slide 9. You talk about, you give us a sort of number for New Zealand on the pro forma basis rolling forward, but, you know, is there a number that you can provide for the relative to where consensus was, the overall sort of net earnings impact?
Sorry, Dan, is that for New Zealand?
No, I think, I mean, the $40 million for New Zealand is quite clear, but just, you know, the is there a pro forma earnings combined of all this that you can give? Because obviously, there's, you know, you're losing a bunch of earnings, you've got all these moving parts. Can you give us a view on the earnings impact?
So Daniel, it's Gordon. The announcement today, together with the Q3 cash flow that calls out an experience loss for claims that we have in Wealth Protection, I think combined that gives you sufficient information in relation to consensus in order to work out what the what the adjustments are relative to 2018. Further to that, Howard's going to work through you during the course of today any of these adjustments so that you can try and strike for 2018 something using a sort of a template that we've developed.
Okay. Second question, really, just the capital needs of that $1.8 billion. What do you estimate is consumed by the go-forward businesses?
Well, Daniel, it depends on what the go-forward businesses look like. And that 1.8 surplus was, as we've always said, a buffer to absorb business as usual and any other matters. As we go forward, we've got to take out of that 1.8, we've got to separate it out and take it out, the wealth protection and mature businesses and everything else. So it's a reasonably complex go-forward capital management plan. What we are doing, as I said to Simon, is just managing the business at the moment on the basis that we have still ownership of it and need to manage it through the course of the period between now and settlement on a business as usual using that $1.8 billion capital surplus.
But Dan, it's Mike, just adding to what Gordon said, though, I think at the conclusion of all of this, we will be a much simpler business that won't have a regulated life insurance business within it, and hence the capital needs for the organisation are going to be less than they are today. Mm. But obviously, as Gordon says, we've got to work through all of that as we go through the separation process. But that's part of what we're looking to do here is to have a much more simplified and if you like, contemporary go-forward business that's focused on wealth management, on AMP Capital. And obviously, the bank will still require regulatory capital because it will be the primary APRA-regulated entity that we continue to hold.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Cargill from UBS Investment Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. A couple of questions. So the first one, just on this relationship agreement that you've outlined between AMP Capital and Resolution Life, is it possible to just give us a little bit more colour on that? What's the duration? I mean, you have said that there's no earnings impact on AMP Capital's earnings, but is that locking in margins over the sort of medium to longer term? How should we be thinking about that arrangement?
Well, James, at the moment there is no change. There's an ongoing investment management agreement that's in place, and that will stay on foot. The relationship agreement which we've executed with Resolution actually confirms the terms of that. Over time, I expect that we will look to formalise that in terms of a revised investment management agreement. But at the moment, there is no change. So what AMP Capital enjoys today, it will continue to enjoy into the future.
Okay. So you say it's ongoing currently without a tenure specified, but in all likelihood, you will at some point sit down with them and there will be a time period that relationship will be determined by?
Well, I think the relationship really is determined as much as anything else over the long term by the performance that we continue to exhibit. Plus, as I mentioned during my part of the presentation, we're also going to go on to their global preferred panel. So there is the opportunity for AMP Capital to pick up further international mandates in the future. But obviously, we're not banking any of those.
Okay, great. And just another one on these earnings changes that you've highlighted, the 80 to 90 million earnings impact on wealth management, that's obviously a post-tax number. And that's largely from revenue impacts. Could you just perhaps provide a bit more colour around where those revenues actually fall away? I presume it would be in both your other revenues as well as your investment-related revenues. How should we be thinking about that in a revenue context? I presume they're not significant costs that come out of the P&L. It's essentially a revenue impact that we should be thinking about.
Yes, James, it's Gordon. Good morning. Mainly out of other revenue, so it's a distribution arrangement between the current business today of wealth protection through the advice network that then is reported up through wealth management, so through other, and it's that area where you're going to see it. There are, however, also some products that are transferring with the sale, and these are products that that were in the life company, which, as we've looked at the separation of that out, whilst reported under wealth management because they manage the products, it's going to be more convenient for customers and better overall for us to actually have those transfer with the life business. So those are included in the sort of transaction perimeter as we move forward.
Mm. Okay, because just looking at other revenues were $108 million in financial 17. So when we think about that 80 to 90 on a pre-tax basis, I mean, that's really going to take out all those other revenues, but there are other items in there that shouldn't disappear.
Yeah, so it's a combination.
A combination, yeah. In both line items.
In both line items. Yes, James.
Okay, I might leave it there and let others ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nigel Pittaway from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Just first of all, are there any particular special capital requirements for the income-generating equity investments, or are they just treated like normal investments?
Nigel, it's Gordon. We would expect them to be treated like normal investments. The changes are going to necessitate the group operating on a slightly different capital structure, because there's one less regulated entity, and we still have to determine whether or not conglomerates will apply. And as you know, conglomerates are deferred in any event. So what we've done in our plans here is taken probably the most conservative capital treatment that you could possibly take, as we've looked at the various investments that we'll be holding.
Okay. And would it be your expectation that if you are to IPO New Zealand Wealth Management, that you'd have to inject capital into that before that would be possible?
Nigel, at this stage, not expecting to have to inject any capital into the New Zealand IPO.
Okay. So the likelihood is that the $1.8 billion surplus that you say you need under the sort of the current structure is going to come down pretty materially. That would be a reasonable conclusion to draw?
It's going to be significantly different, because the capital management framework will not require the surplus that we hold for the life company, and that life company surplus is broken into both par and non-par business. So, yes, it's going to come down significantly in dollar terms.
Great. And maybe just a question on the cash flows, if I could. I mean, obviously, the net outflows are reasonably significant, as you said, not too surprising. Can you just comment on whether that's the march to industry funds we've been reading about? Is that sort of the impression you're getting in terms of your cash flows? And also, you know, obviously, there does seem to have been a few now corporate super accounts go. So is there any sort of risk that this is just the thin end of the wedge in terms of that?
So Nigel, it's Mike. Look, not surprising, and we kind of called out what we were seeing with the net cash flow performance. The interesting thing, and I've said this a few times, is it's not so much the cash outflows. If you actually look at the detail in our cash flow statement, you'll see that the cash outflows for this last quarter are actually less than they were for the equivalent quarter last year. The big issue for us is and continues to be lack of inflow. And yes, I think that the industry super funds are benefiting from that. And I think that is likely to continue at least until the final report of the Royal Commission is handed down and we get some more clarity around all of this. It's been reported that a couple of super funds have announced their intention to tender. We would like to continue with those funds, but there's no guarantees around all of that. I don't think it's the thin end of the wedge. Certainly, from what I've heard, And I have contacted the major clients that we've got. They remain satisfied with the service that we are giving to them, but obviously we have to continue to deliver that service. The one qualification I've got to that is that there are some funds who in their normal cycle would test the market every 5 years or so, and we'll have one or two of those that have indicated that their cycle is up in 2019, and they will look at that. We'll compete hard for those and would expect to keep them, other things being equal.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Julian Braganza from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi there, gentlemen. It's actually Siddharth Parameswaran from JP Morgan. Just a question, if I can, firstly, just about how you went about deciding whether it was in shareholders' interest to actually do this transaction. If I look at these numbers, you know, the embedded value that is associated with these businesses that you're selling is about $4.5 billion. Now, you'll keep some value from the IPO of the New Zealand business, let's say $500 million. It still means that, you know, the net proceeds that you're effectively getting versus the $4 billion left from the business. For the EV that's left, on my numbers, you're getting less than $3 billion for that, and you're losing significant dis-synergies. You know, $40 million of group costs. You're keeping $85 million of costs within Contemporary Wealth Management. Seems like a huge loss in value just from this transaction. I'm just wondering, did you feel you had to do this, or what thought process went into deciding that you would actually, what was the alternative? Were there any alternatives that were considered?
Mike, all alternatives were considered, from keeping the business through other forms of divestment. We felt that this was the best outcome given what the long-term strategic agenda for the organisation is. And as I mentioned, we think on an ex-franking credits basis, this is about 0.82 times embedded value. Remembering that embedded value is actually purely a measure of the cash flows that are going to emerge out of these businesses over a considerably long period of time. What we have done is monetize that today, and the board felt that that given the strategic agenda that the organization has got, this was a transaction that was in shareholders' interest. From my own personal point of view, obviously I was also concerned to make sure that customers were taken care of, and I think they will be. And importantly, we've got a number of staff that will be transferring with this. So alternative transactions may have seen that number of staff not remain in employment. So I think the key issues that we were looking at were considered.
I take your point, 0.8 times EV. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's excluding franking credits, but there's also significant costs that are left in the business. With respect, it just seems like there's and you're still keeping some risk in the businesses that you're selling. So it seems like there's just been a tremendous transfer of value. Maybe I'll just ask another question. Just following on from previous questions around the surplus capital. Can I just be clear that the $1.8 billion that you're effectively saying was your surplus capital position at the last result? If you do decide to actually give some capital back to shareholders at some point, which you said you'll assess at the end of end of next year, can I just be clear that already in the earnings adjustments that you've made, you've already assumed that there will be some earnings on that, right? So even if the capital requirements come down, effectively, if you give any of that back, obviously the earnings will also reduce. These earnings are not additional. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've assumed that there's obviously an adjustment to the underlying investment income, which is the income that we get on that capital set.
Yep.
We're actually replacing some of the investments that we would otherwise have in the shareholders' funds with these alternative investments. So you know and you've seen, and we've been consistent in our disclosures around what is in that shareholder fund balance, and that's, you know, predominantly cash. So I would say, Sid, it's going to be a fundamentally different capital structure go forward. So I know and understand and empathise with the challenges that you and the rest of the analysts have in trying to actually assess how much of that $1.8 billion is going to be left. But in fact, it's going to be a different capital structure going forward from the point that we actually finalise the transaction.
Yep. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Brendan Carrick from Macquarie Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, just most of mine covered off, so just a quick clarification. The remaining $40 million for New Zealand that's been called out, is that going to be included in ongoing operations and therefore used to calculate the dividend payout ratio?
Yes, it will, Brendan, until such time as the decision has been made definitively to IPO.
Okay, and then just on the China Life, when that gets transferred across back into AMP Limited, assuming regulatory approvals go through, is that going to move into AMP CI or is no decision made on what division that gets transferred into yet?
I don't think, Brendan, it's Mike, I don't think we've made a decision on that. What we were calling out today was we regard that as a significant long-term opportunity for us, and we were very keen to keep it inside the AMP group. Likewise, China Life, and I've had conversations with them about this, obviously. Likewise, China Life was very keen to remain involved with AMP in its revised form. So we're very pleased to have that investment still with us.
Cool. And just maybe just a quick clarification on Sid's question just on investment income. So obviously the $110 million, you know, that's not into perpetuity, those numbers. You know, there's an economic share for a period of time of the $600 mil at about $50 mil per year, and then the preference shares, you know, you've called out different maturities for those instruments. Obviously, that steps away, and then the investment income is going down. Can you give any sense as to what the investment income that you were previously receiving, excluding the new 110, settles down at or moves towards?
No. Brendan, it doesn't sort of kind of disappear. So it gets translated into cash, and then we've got cash to redeploy. And then depending on what the capital structure is of the group and our regulatory regime, we will then determine how to deploy it. That very conservative deployment in our shareholder funds at the moment reflects the fact that were we to invest that under our current capital construct into higher risk assets, we would incur a capital impost as a consequence of that. That's why we've kept it necessarily conservative. So as these roll off, we'll have cash, and then that cash will be reinvested where we reinvest it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Brett Lemesere from Shaw and Partners. Please go ahead.
Thanks. A question on the value of the mature interest that you've got and the nature of the economic interest. What is the nature of that economic interest? You've got $50 million of earnings on historically $150 million, so it looks like you're just retaining a third of the business. Is that the right way to think about it?
We are retaining, Brett, a percentage of the business. And it's retained through an arrangement that we have with the AMP Life business that will be owned by Resolution. And we've set up a particular note structure where we can get access to specifically the earnings of that mature business. And those will come to us over time together with franking, together with dividends. What we've given you there is the after-tax earnings number that we would expect.
If the runoff is worse than you expect, do you receive a disproportionate share of the unfortunate outcome?
Potentially, I think you'd say that, but I think we're very, very confident in the runoff profile. That runoff profile has stuck at every occasion to our assessment, and that would be the case we see going forward. But, you know, in a way, we share in the economic gains and potential losses related to it.
Okay, so the capital invested in it should be similar to what you've got at the moment because the risks and benefits are much the same as what you currently have. You've just got a third of it.
you talk about the capital invested, I think the whole capital structure is going to be different. So as I said in answer to previous questions on capital, particularly to Nigel, who was asking about any particular imposts, this is going to be judged differently in capital terms, because the capital we hold against that at the moment is held effectively through the life company. It's in the participating part of the capital structure of the life company.
So there could be a beneficial capital arbitrage, is that what you're saying, by taking it out of the life company environment?
So I'm not going to go to the word arbitrage, but I think the capital structure will be fundamentally different to what we have at the moment.
Okay, thank you. And just one other question. When you've got the underlying investment income, you say additional underlying investment income, I assume you're talking about additional to an underlying level. It was about $50 million in the first half. So if you'd done the transaction 6 months earlier, you're saying that for 6 months you'd have roughly 50 plus roughly 55 of being half the 110. That's what you mean in that line?
What we mean is it's 110 full year pro forma. So I know you're going into 6 monthly, half yearlies, so I wouldn't be doing that. I'd be going looking at it on a full year basis.
Okay, so let me ask the question differently then. Just to be clear, so for the 2017 year, it was $95 million. So if you'd done the transaction a year ago, then that number we would have expected to be roughly, not exactly, 95 plus 110, roughly 200. Yep. That's what you mean?
Yep, that's exactly what we mean, Brett.
Great. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from Ross Curran from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, gents. Just two questions, please. Just the first is around timing. Can you just talk us through the timing of this transaction and the implications on the existing reinsurance contracts? Is there any capital impact from potentially the existing ones getting cancelled and coming back in?
Ross, it's Mike. No, the existing contracts remain on foot. There is no no cancellation clauses available to the reinsurers, to the current reinsurers in that. And the transaction that we're announcing in New Zealand is obviously a reinsurance of that book, which is additional to the ones that we've currently got, but everything else stays on foot.
Great, thank you. And then the second question is just around the remaining growth businesses. Can you give us a feel for planner numbers and when you should expect a stabilisation of cash flows in the wealth management business? And then further to that, do you think your pricing on your product there is at market, or should we expect some repricing down there going forward?
Well, Ross, there's a lot in that question. In terms of planners, we've said that planner numbers are not necessarily where we're concentrated these days. I know we used to talk about that, but that basically we are more interested in getting a planner cohort that is as professional, as productive and as compliant as we can be. And that means that there is going to be some reshaping of the planner network, and that is underway. But we're not fixated on a number. What we want is productive planners involved with us and giving the best service that they can to the current and ongoing customers of AMP. In terms of the cash flows, really, really difficult. We've called out that the current situation really is a lack of inflows for us. I think as matters stabilise and we rebuild the reputation of AMP, and we think we're on the way with that, then we expect that will change as well. From a pricing perspective, we think the majority of our products are at or around market, but obviously we'll continue to look at those to make sure we remain competitive. The point I would make, though, is that as we go through this transaction and complete it, AMP looks very different. We are a much more simplified organisation with a slimmed down structure, and I think that gives us a significant opportunity to further compete.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Spotswood from Airlie Funds Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, could just get some clarity on this group office cost as well. Like, so last year that was $74 million. I don't quite understand what you're saying about this stranded $40 million. So all other things being equal, what does that 74 go to on a kind of pro forma basis? Thanks.
Good morning, David Gordon. You would simply add the 40 to it.
Okay, so it's whatever that is, 114, so it's going up. Yep, cool, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up from Siddharth Parameswaran from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Gentlemen, two questions if I can. One is just, what is the residual EV that you think will be left on Contemporary Wealth Management post this? Could you give us some idea?
Sid, yes, it's Gordon. The construct of EV for the wealth management business comes about as a consequence of us having that business through the life company. That's why we report EVs for it. Going forward, we are not going to report an EV for the wealth management business. So I'm not going to give you today an impact potentially on the EV for the wealth management business.
Okay. Could you tell me how much the EV was relating to the revenues that were coming as for the from the life company? Just the, I suppose, the adjustment.
Well, we've given you the adjustments pro forma. Okay. To the wealth management business, Sid, in an attempt to seek to get you to the point where you can understand the go-forward earnings of that business pro forma annualized 2018.
Okay, great. Okay, just a second question then. Just out of the stranded costs, so the $40 million in group costs plus, the lack of income that will come through in Contemporary Wealth Management going forward. Are there any cost offsets that are likely to come through which will limit those impacts?
Sid, yeah, we're always going to look to be as cost efficient as we can be. Whilst those are residual costs that are stranded, we're going to continue to look at whatever we need to do to make the organisation as cost efficient as possible going forward. So that's the natural outworking of commercially how we are going to be working. Obviously, the challenge that we've got is we've got to run these businesses from now through to completion. So in that regard, we haven't sought to take any of that $40 million out for the purpose of today, and we've assumed that on the basis that it's relatively conservative. But we don't want to get ahead of ourselves in trying to get into those stranded residual corporate office costs.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time.
In that case, if that is to continue, yes, it looks like it is. If you do have any other questions as the day wears on, please feel free to either call myself or Mike Leonard, and we'll be really happy to help you. In that case, I'd like to bring an end to this morning's teleconference. Thank you.